Welcome to Making Financial Sense. Good Saturday morning. I'm Chris Conley. Tom King is off today. He has some high school baseball responsibilities. And Merle Kelch is also off today. So it's Chris Conley and attorney Alan Haugum. Morning, Alan. We haven't spoken in a while. Good to see you again.
It's been a while, Chris. Have a great Saturday morning to you.
If Alan was a quarterback, he would specialize in the handoff, as in handing off assets to loved ones. This is a special area of the law, estate planning and how to make sure that you have a will and have provided for those loved ones that you want to have what you have built up over your lifetime.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy, Chris. Handing the ball off, protecting the ball maybe a little bit. And we really do try to specialize in things that take the investing and the saving and the lifetime of really gathering assets and safeguarding them, and then trying to figure out what you can do to send them or keep them for the people that you want to give them to.
Let's start with something very basic. If you think that a week before you go off to the Shady Hills nursing home that you can say, I want to leave it all to my son, so that it doesn't work that way.
No, not at all.
And if you think on your deathbed, you're going to say, quick, give me a piece of paper. I'm going to scribble out that all of my stuff goes to my beloved daughter. It doesn't work that way either.
No, we have had people who thought, you know, I can wait. I'll just do this later, or I'll do it next week or next month or next year, or I'll wait till I start to feel a little bit sick, and then we'll take care of it. And, of course, that's the time when people are the least able to handle these things because of the health.
All right. In your area of the law, estate planning and the things that you'd like to leave to heirs, there have been dramatic changes. We should probably spend a good chunk of our time together today talking about that, because if you thought you had a plan a year or two ago, just the landscape and the law surrounding this area has changed a lot, and we should go into that. Let's start with the basics.
Sure.
Huge number of people that I speak to don't have wills. They're like me. They're in their 30s or 40s. Life is going to go on for a long time. They're not going to have an unexpected demise. Why do those people need a will?
Well, I think a lot of it is just to get the absolute basic ground rules covered. There are a few different reasons why you would, even for kids. If anyone has a child and you want to figure out who that child would live with, guardians and things, that's an easy one. But even beyond that, just the basic rules as to who things are going to be distributed to and who you want to take care of those. If you don't do even the basics, Chris, it's probably whoever runs to the courthouse first and shouts the loudest. As strange as that sounds, a lot of times that's how it works.
I've heard this, that the state has a will for those that don't have it, and it's probably not the will that you want.
Right. We talk about it with clients to say that everyone has an estate plan. They don't realize that, or I'll talk to a group of people and say, all right, raise your hand if you have an estate plan, and about 10% of the hands go up. And I have to tell them that, no, everyone has an estate plan. It's just that Wisconsin chose it for you if you haven't done it yourself. You can do anything you want, but if you haven't done it, then Wisconsin does it for you. And they have the exact same plan, regardless of whether you're married or single or married for a second or third time or have kids or no kids or you're 22 or 62 or 92. Everybody has the exact same plan. So it's not the best plan for any of those people. It's really just the lowest common denominator, which is also the most time-consuming, most expensive, most heavily taxed. I mean, you just go right down the line.
Let's use the same hypothetical person in their 30s or 40s. It is probably more likely that they will have some kind of debilitating injury than meet an untimely death that will involve time in rehab or a nursing home, or perhaps it's a stroke or a heart attack that doesn't take their life,
right,
but that leaves them at diminished capacity. You will want an estate plan in that situation, too, and that's probably the more common scenario.
We do see that. It's the type of thing where it's easy to think, it won't happen to me, and it won't happen to me, and I've never heard of this. But all of a sudden, when you talk to people, you say, oh, yeah, I do know someone who like that, or I do know someone in that situation. And even the very basics, when you talk about a basic will or a basic document, one of the things that gets overlooked probably too often is what we call a power of attorney, just a basic financial power of attorney or a durable power of attorney. Keep in mind, if you don't do this, and that situation you're talking about, Chris, comes up, for some reason you're not able, because of your health, because of health reasons, you're not able to deal with your finances for some period of time. It might be a mental issue or like you said, an accident of some kind that you can't. The court has a procedure that's called a guardianship. And a guardianship is where we get two doctors, two lawyers, sometimes three lawyers. We have a social worker. We get a judge. We go through a series of court hearings, and it costs several thousand dollars by the time we're all done just to figure out who can officially sign for you for any of your financial or legal documents. And you say, well, wait a minute. I want my wife to sign. Shouldn't my wife sign? Isn't that why we're married? Isn't that automatic?
If someone else puts their hand up, then it may not be your wife. It could be a father or a child, perhaps even a child that you're estranged from, who says that I'm the most qualified to handle this person's affairs. Sure.
Absolutely. And the state says none of those people are automatic. Even if you've married that person, it doesn't mean they're automatic because you've spent your entire adult life, you spent your entire married life choosing every single day not to name them as the person who can handle your financial matters. And Wisconsin says there must be a reason for that. So what you do is just at least create a power of attorney, and we can talk a little bit about what those do.
This point was kind of brought home for me because of a friend of mine from back in Connecticut. She was in a long-term relationship with a boyfriend, but they never got married. This is a relationship that went on for 10 or 15 years. He died suddenly. They shared a home. They shared their finances. But one day during a skiing vacation, he suffered a catastrophic heart attack and died. She gets nothing in that scenario. And the money went, he had a disabled younger child, wound up going to his ex-wife to maintain the estate for her child who needed very intensive medical care. I think of that story, a real-life story from a friend that I know, which is why some level of estate planning, even if you're younger and even if you're healthier, is necessary, because when you pass on, it's not going to be the way you would wish it to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even a base level. And those types of things that you describe, Chris, those aren't unusual.
True. I'm sure you have had
absolutely
similar stories like that have happened in your office.
And it's the type of thing where people will call and say, well, there's been a big mistake. This isn't the way it's supposed to go. We all agree it's not supposed to be this way. What can we do about it now? And, you know, you get that sick feeling in the pit of your stomach. And we usually just say, well, just bring us the documents, just show us. And they say, well, we don't have any actual documents, but this is what the plan was. This is what we talked about. Say, well, okay, well, bring us whatever you have. And a lot of times it's going to be deeds to real estate or bank accounts or retirement accounts and things like that. And they'll bring those and say, well, we owned a house together. Well, good. What happens now is you have to buy out that man's ex-wife or his child or his estranged someone from the house that the two of you have lived in for 10 or 12 or 15 years. And it really is just, it can cause financial hardship. It can cause people to lose their dwelling, lose their house. It really is a pretty bad situation.
We mentioned at the top of the show that this is an area of the law that was changed under the most recent budget in Wisconsin. We will spend some time talking about that when we come back after that break. So again, even if you think you have a plan, the law that your plan sits on top of has shifted a little bit on you. And we'll cover that when we come right back. Alan Haugum is in for Merle Kelch on Making Financial Sense. I'm Chris Conley on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step...
That symbol in your weather app isn't going to tell you when.
Oh, not now.
Your buddy can't tell you how long.
Yeah, I think it's going to rain this weekend.
And poking your head out the window?
Ow!
What, you're kidding, right? Your reliable forecast is at the top and bottom of the hour.
It's just so I can plan accordingly.
Know when to make plans and what's coming so you and your family can take action.
Being ready for the big storms.
Severe weather on WSAU and WSAU.com.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Patrick Corbin, starting pitcher for Arizona. An injury to your teeth on the playing field can lead to lifelong dental problems. I always wear a mouth guard to protect my smile. You should too. I encourage kids and adults to play it safe this summer and all year round. No matter what your sport is, protect your smile. Wear a mouth guard at every practice and every game.
A message from the American Association of Orthodontists. Visit MyLifeMySmile.org.
Our Saturday morning program is Making Financial Sense. Normally, Merle Kelch and Tom King are here. Chris Conley and attorney Alan Haugum both filling in today. Alan's area of expertise is wills and estate planning. Alan, let's start with some of the changes under the new budget that was signed by Governor Walker. This affects anyone who has a long-term plan. If you're looking to pass on your assets in a nursing home or in an estate situation, talk us through some of what is different now.
Well, Chris, a lot of the basis for this was just to update or change or really make stricter the requirements regarding transferring assets to your kids and still qualifying for medical assistance or Medicaid or other types of help to help pay for nursing home care. And regardless of which side of the political fence you're on, if you live in Wisconsin, this is really affecting how people deal with things. People used to think that I can just give it to kids. You know what? I'll just give it to my kids and that's okay, right? And the state says, no, if you give it to your kids, that you had to do it a certain period of time before. First it was 3 years, then it was 5 years, and if you didn't do it 5 years in advance, they tacked on another 5 years, and then it
this is what's known as a look-back period.
Right. It's this look-back plus a penalty period, which really we still have, that the penalties for giving things to kids now are so severe that most of the people who get through the rules just say, you know, I just can't deal with that. It almost becomes, in some instances, an unlimited, a lifetime penalty if you don't make it past all of these successive time periods. So people say, you know, what's left? Well, one of the common things, and I think one of the biggest changes, and certainly one of the most misunderstood, is the people who said, well, I just want to give my house to my kids. Can't, of everything else, I'll spend the money in the checkbook and the CD and maybe some of the retirement plan, but I just want to give my home to my kids. Can I do that? And people would say yes, and they've done this for years and years. But then folks in the next breath would say, now wait a minute, but I'm going to live there for the rest of my lifetime. I don't want my kids to ever kick me out of the house, which has happened. We have a number of cases in Wisconsin, some people we've dealt with who've done that. So we say, no, parents, they want to live in the house for the rest of their lives and be guaranteed that they can never lose that, but make sure that the value of the house is given to the kids. So they give the house to the kids and keep what's called a life estate. Lots of people have this. It's on the deed. It says the grantors reserve a life estate to live in the house for the rest of their lives. And people said, great, we're done. And some people, lots of people did that. Lots of people in our area, in every area, did this. What the state did last year is just change how that is dealt with after someone's died. Now, a life estate never seemed to be a great idea for tax reasons, and if we have some time, we can talk about the reasons for that. But it's really become a much more severe of a penalty, and it almost pulled the rug out from a lot of people who did that because the premise behind it was that if you gave your house to your kids but kept the right to live there, then later, 2 years later, 3 years later, or even say 3, 5, 7, 10, 20 years later, you need nursing home care. And the nursing home says, how many assets do you have? And if you haven't done any planning, if you haven't done anything to protect any of the rest of it, then they will use or spend all of the rest of everything that you haven't dealt with. But at least someone said, I have the house. So they gave that house to the kids. It's a $100,000 house. And if it was done now, if it's done more than 5 years ago, it's not counted in the initial category of assets. And people said, great. And if someone was in a nursing home for whatever period of time, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever that period of time was, and even if they received some help or some medical assistance or Medicaid with the cost of the care from the state of Wisconsin, that the state, after that parent died or after the parents died, the life estate, the right to live in the house, was extinguished. And you say, well, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, it just means that if the parents reserve the right to live in that house for the rest of their lifetimes, but both parents have passed away, then there is no more right to live in the house for the rest of the parents' lifetimes.
The lifetime is over.
So that right goes away. So now we just have a house that was transferred to the kids. And the kids say, all right, well, if none of the kids are going to move into mom and dad's house, they then sell the house and the proceeds are transferred to those kids. And that becomes the de facto inheritance. You know, if, like I said, if they haven't done any other planning, they would lose really all the rest of the assets to whatever type of care. But at least the house was saved. Well, Wisconsin said as of last year, they've changed a rule that actually goes into effect in July. It goes into effect July 1st. That says, if you did this, doesn't matter how many years ago, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years ago, it doesn't matter. They say that the right to live there has a value. And because it has a value, the state is going to collect that value from you, not only whenever there's a transfer of the house after the parents need nursing home care, but even now after the parents have died. And you say, wait a minute. And a lot of people are stunned by this, that the state would try to go back and collect this. And what the state's theory is that the right to live there has some value. And what it means is, Chris, if your parents gave their home to you, they had a $100,000 house and they gave it to you and they kept the right to live there for the rest of their lifetimes, you could still sell what they gave to you. Technically, you have the right to that house after they've died. So you come to me and you say, Alan, I'd like to sell you this house. I don't need it anymore. I'm raising money for a different cause. And what do you think of that? And I say, well, Chris, I like that house. It's a great house, great neighborhood. It's a $100,000 house. I'd love to buy it. How much do you want for it? And you would say, well, I don't know, how about $100,000? Makes sense to me. And I'd say, Chris, you're crazy. There's no way I'd pay you $100,000 because your parents are living there. And I can't even move into that house as long as either one of your parents is alive. So because I can't move into it until after their lifetimes, I'm going to give you less than $100,000. And we start to talk about what might be fair. And depending on their age, if your parents were 99 and a half, I might be willing to give you close to $100,000. If your parents are 59, I might give you a whole lot less. So the state says there's a value just depending on what the age of your parents is. It tied a little bit to their life expectancy.
All right. Stop right there for a moment, because here comes the next question, which I can see coming right away. I would have to sell the house at a discount if my parents are still alive. That's the scenario that you just mapped out. Is it possible that I could owe the state money, have a net loss because they say the value of my parents living in the house is more than what I'm getting from the buyer of the house?
Well, certainly the concern there, and that's one of the huge risks about selling it if you actually did sell it while your parents were in it. So that's why we strongly discourage that. Sometimes the math turned a little bit upside down. If you sell it for the wrong price and then your parents need nursing home care shortly thereafter, absolutely. The theory, just, you know, as we said, is that they have the state's going to put their own number on whatever that right to live there is worth, regardless of what you sell it for. So that if whoever's listening, don't go out and start selling those houses your parents gave to you. But where the state, and where this really ties into the state's changes last year, is if you and I can understand that there's a discount in that house because I'm not going to pay you full price. What most kids said is, well, that's okay. We're not selling it anyway. We're going to keep it throughout our parents' lifetime. Whether that's good or bad, and we can talk about the pitfalls to that maybe after, you know, the second half of the show. But the state says if there's a value to that, then when your parents are in the nursing home, they said they don't own a house. They haven't owned a house for years. They gave it away a long time ago. But they have a right to live there. That must be worth something. If that house is worth $100,000 total, and the part that you could sell to me is worth something less, maybe what you could sell to me is worth $60,000 or $70,000, then what your parents have must be worth something. And the state says apparently that right to live there in and of itself has a value, so we're going to consider that to be an asset that your parents are now responsible for. And you say, well, that's fine, but we don't have any cash. It's just a house. We don't have any cash to pay you. And the state says, now, that's fine. That's okay. We'll wait to collect that until after your parents have died, which starts to sound a little bit like dirty pool, because the state is saying, we'll just let this slide for now, But after your parents have died, if they have received nursing home care and if the state has provided any benefits through Medicaid or medical assistance for the cost of that care, then the state says they'll come back and collect it from you, Chris, as the child who now owns the remainder interest in the house. And for anyone who's got a scratch pad and is kind of keeping score at home, you say, well, wait a minute. After Chris's parents have died, the value of their right to live there for the rest of their lifetime is zero. Their lifetime is over. There is no more right to live there. And the state says, oh, you're right. You know what? We'll change the rules and say that we're going to collect the value of the right to live there as of the day before they died. And you say, this is starting to get confusing now. And we can kind of summarize this and just say that if anyone's parents have given the house to them and kept the right to live there, then after the parents died, the state's going to come back and ask you for a percentage of it based on the age of the parents when they died.
I can see right away also this becomes very complicated if there are multiple kids involved.
Sure.
Because then the sale of the house would be the parents' estate if they died with no cash otherwise. And then a huge chunk of the estate is going to go to satisfy this right to live requirement for the state. And other brothers and sisters who might say, I didn't have anything involved with transferring mom's house or what have you, but what do you mean this huge chunk of money is coming out of what I thought was my inheritance because brother Billy over there handled the sale of the house and didn't tell his two other brothers and sisters what was going on?
It can be a problem. Now, it's a little bit mitigated if all of the names are on the deed, but we have a lot of parents who said, no, we're going to put one kid's name on the deed, but after we die, make sure you share everything with everyone. And they say, well, it's a $100,000 house. We have four kids. What do you mean I get $15,000? That doesn't work. I should get $25,000. They say, well, there's some new mysterious law where we lose part of it, and you're right. It's a... And you think about it, if you want to put this in real numbers, just for anyone out there, let's say your parents transferred the house to you, you know, a long time ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever the number is, and it's a $100,000 house, just a real round number for easy math. If whatever our life expectancy, let's say we're a little bit over our life expectancy, and the easy one is about 82. If parents died, second parent died, and they're 82, and the house has been in the kids' names for years, the parents needed nursing home care, so they say, oh, thank goodness we transferred it to the kids. Parents are 82. We now sell the house after the parents have died. Well, what the state says is they're going to want about 40% of the value of that house. So it's not just a little tiny sliver. This is 40%. You know, it's $40,000 on a pretty modest house in our area.
And you can imagine how after a parent dies, particularly if the children, the heirs, don't understand the law or don't understand the changes in the law, this is the kind of thing that leads to hard feelings. This is the kind of thing where you have brothers and aunts and uncles and parents fighting with each other. And, you know, I have four kids, and when I pass, when my time comes, I don't want there to be any arguing.
Exactly.
I want all of them to have is memories of me, hopefully good memories, and that the other things, the how to divide up dad's stuff, is all taken care of, and it's not something where people are going to land in court or even have those hard feelings of, I think my brother didn't handle this right, or my sister got more than she should have. And without planning, I'm sure you hear about that all the time.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a lot of parents will say, well, we're going to have this in the hands of the oldest. You know, we're going to have this in the oldest child or the one who lives closest, or we have a child who's just good at numbers. So they kind of take care of it, or they take the parents to their attorney, you know, their guy who does this or their gal who does this. And then later the kids say, wait a minute, you said you were going to take care of this. What happened? You didn't do any of that. You took them there, and now it's this big disaster, and we lose 40% of things that we thought we planned for years ago. We didn't do any planning for any of the other assets. Those are all gone because we didn't protect them. Now we lose the house, too. This is just a disaster of the first order.
We're going to continue this conversation after our news break. Tom King is here in the newsroom. I'm Chris Conley, and Alan Haugum, our attorney, is here filling in for Merle Kelch. This is Making Financial Sense on WSAU.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9. WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. Grief-stricken families in South Korea are pushing for authorities to quickly lift a sunken ferry from the frigid waters where it went down earlier this week so they can recover the bodies of their loved ones. The ferry was carrying hundreds of passengers, most of them students and educators, on a high school field trip when it capsized and sank. A threatening note found on a Delta Airlines flight from Detroit to Denver is turning out to be a hoax. Flight 1500 was directed to a remote area of Denver International Airport after arriving yesterday with 151 passengers and six crew members. The passengers were quickly taken off the plane by bus without their luggage to be interviewed by FBI officials. After a search of the plane, which included bomb-sniffing dogs, nothing was found. Waukesha police are seeking the public's help to locate a missing girl. Authorities say 13-year-old Robin Christina Cardozo has been missing since Wednesday, but contact was made with the girl via social media on Friday. Investigators do not suspect foul play. In sports, the Brewers beat the Pirates last night 5-3. Kyle Loesch picked up his third win of the year. Carlos Gomez had a solo home run and also added an RBI single. The two teams will play again tonight. And you can hear the game on WSAU pregame show at 5:30. Also in the Stanley Cup playoffs last night, three more games. Montreal beat Tampa Bay 4-1. The Canadiens up in that series 2-0. Anaheim beat Dallas 3-2. The Ducks lead that series 2-0. And Detroit beat Boston 1-0. The Red Wings lead that series 1-0. The weather forecast for today, we're looking for breezy conditions. A few rain showers possible in the afternoon, mainly north of Wausau, high 57. Mostly cloudy tomorrow and a good chance of morning showers with a high of 65. Monday, clouds and sun mix. Mild, a chance of showers again, high of 63. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
Sir, do you know why I pulled you over?
Officer, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Well, obviously your head does not fit inside this car.
Well, I was listening to this great show, and it really made me think about...
Seth Mila and the WSAU Wisconsin Morning News.
You should make people think. You should challenge.
And I thought, oh, that's not good.
Something to think about.
On WSAU and WSAU.com.
This is Making Financial Sense on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU. All of our shows are podcast, too, so if you missed something or just want to hear it again, make sure you understand it. That's all available on our website, WSAU.com. Merle Kelch is off today. Attorney Alan Haugum is filling in. I'm Chris Conley, guest hosting for Tom King. By the way, if you have specific questions, again, Attorney Alan Haugum's area of expertise is estate planning. We'll take your call, 715-845-2155, 715-845-2155. We've been talking about estates that involve real estate or a house where parents have the right to live in the house and that the state has changed those rules. The rule effects, you said, change starting on July 1st, which means people who have already gone through this part of their estate plan should probably be calling or making an appointment to make sure all of that is up to date.
Well, I think you're right, Chris. It's something that a lot of folks thought was taken care of and was done and was over with, and in all reality now isn't. This rule about the real estate and the life estate, it applies to folks, just this specific part. Other parts went into effect last year. This specific part applies to people who've passed away after July 1st of 2014. So unless you're going to pass away sooner than that for planning purposes, and we don't recommend it, this applies to you.
We are going to continue that conversation. I want to get right to a phone caller as well. The number is 715-845-2155. Hi, caller. What's your name, please?
My name is Jack.
Jack, you're on with Attorney Alan Haugum. Go ahead.
Morning, Jack.
Good morning. I'm wondering, I bought my house, or bought my mother's house about 7 years ago, and there was a verbal agreement with her that she could live there for the rest of her life. And there's nothing in writing, but I own the house. Part of that agreement was she would pay the taxes, the property taxes, on that, and then nothing else. Could I use that as a rental property? The taxes are about $1,200 a year, so you're talking $100 a month. Could I use that as a tax deduction if I made it a rental property?
Jack, we're going to get Alan's answer in just a moment. I'm going to have you take your response off the air. Your phone call, your cell phone is breaking up on us a little bit. So we won't be able to interact with you, but Alan is going to give you his opinion and kind of steer you on that. So here's a situation where it doesn't sound like there's anything in writing about the parent getting to stay in the house. Sounds like that complicates things right off the bat.
Well, I would say if from Jack's standpoint, it's a little bit less of a concern, and maybe we have a couple parts to this. We have his mother's standpoint, and then we have Jack talking about the rental side.
Sure, talk us through all of those.
Yeah, from his mom's side, you know, we get a little bit concerned if the house is transferred to Jack, and she doesn't have any nothing in writing that says she has to live there, partially because, you know, what if something happens to Jack? If Jack gets into an accident, Jack is on that cell phone on the highway, and all of a sudden there's a car accident. You know, if something happens to Jack, the house is going through his estate to his wife, his kids, his creditors, his whomever, and mom has to get out of the house, essentially, or she has to buy her way back into the house she already transferred.
Even for the mother or father in this case, if there's nothing in writing, what if there's a disagreement over whether the mother or father can live there on their own? Or if they need nursing home care, or if they need to live with another sibling, say, in a warmer climate. The parent is at the mercy of their kids, and it's very common to have disagreements of, can mom or dad continue to live here? Do they need live-in care? Is it too much to have them live around our kids and grandkids? Those are very common scenarios.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are questions that deal with family, that deal with health care, and that deal with large amounts of money. I don't know any of those things would ever cause a conflict.
Right.
Chris,
people have fought over those since the beginning of time. Sure.
It's, you know, those are, you know, has anyone ever had a disagreement with a family member? Now, hopefully, and Jack sounded like from the brief breaking up cell phone interlude, sounded like a fine guy. And I think he did say he bought the house from his mother.
Yes,
so that's different. And the state is less concerned if you buy it, frankly, even for mom's nursing home care, because they say if Jack actually paid his mother and if he paid her fair market value or close to actual fair market value of that house, they say they don't care about the transfer. They don't care about the house in Jack's name because they're just going to get mom's cash, you know, because Jack gave her cash and they can do that. And even before we get to the nth degree on it, you know, to answer Jack's question, can he turn this into a rental? I think the biggest part of that is really for his taxes. You know, the only reason we care about it, he's not actually renting it to third parties. He's renting it to his mom. For the value of the taxes, really what he needs to do is just grab his CPA and see what the rest of his tax situation looks like, where he has other assets, where he has other taxable income, if he has passive investment income. Will all make a difference as to whether that makes sense as a rental. If he just says, hey, mom, you go pay the taxes, that might not be enough. I don't think that's probably enough paperwork to make me feel comfortable. But if he, you know, just wrote down something on a piece of paper that said, oh, by the way, the rent is $100 a month, and instead of paying me once a month, mom can pay him once a year, and she can pay the taxes on his behalf. Is that okay? You know, is that okay with his CPA? I think that might be the best answer to your question, Jack, just very specifically for that situation.
It's very clear, though, that you're going to need legal advice. Alan, why don't we take a moment now? You have an office and a phone number in downtown Wausau. In fact, Alan's office has changed over the last couple of years. You see his big sign when you go by County Market and Shopko Plaza. Give us a phone number where people can get a hold of you either after the show or to make an appointment for the upcoming weeks.
Oh, sure, Chris. Yeah, my office, it's Haugum Law Firm, LLC. Took me a long time to come up with that name. Haugum Law Firm.
And there's a beautiful sign that you drive right past it. After those metal birds in the middle of the road there, you'll find the Haugum Law Office.
That's right. Yeah, if you're in the area of the birds, you can see my sign on the Abbey Bank building. No, our phone number is area code 715-843-5001. 843-5001. Actually, we get a lot of questions on our website, which is Haugum Law. And people always want me to spell that. It's Haugum. L-A-W, Haugum Law.com. We've got a blog, and we've got all kinds of question and answer things on there. But I think, you know, this is, so for the Jacks of the world, or if someone doesn't get their question answered today on the show, just sending something to us or call us. But it's these types of things, you know, even when Jack talks about this type of house, it's, is there any concern? Is there any risk for mom? Sure. It's, you know, mom's at a big risk here if something happens. Is there any risk for Jack? And I think then we get into what, Chris, you were talking about. Different siblings, you know, if mom has some planning to do and she's dealing with Jack, and the siblings think they're going to get the house when mom dies. Jack has three brothers and sisters, and they say, well, Jack's been handling it all for mom, and Jack said the house is taken care of, and he says, don't worry about it. And frankly, sometimes other kids just aren't that financially adept. Everyone's good at something, and some kids just don't get into the financial side of it. They say, Jack took care of that. And mom dies later, and Jack says, oh, no, mom doesn't have a house. She sold that to me. I gave her the cash. She spent the cash, and there's nothing left. But, oh, by the way, I have a house. Well, that's sometimes something that causes a little bit of difficulty with the other kids, even if it's completely reasonable from Jack's perspective and his mom, causes hard feelings. And that's something we definitely want to avoid.
We are taking calls here between now and 9 o'clock for Attorney Alan Haugum, who is guest hosting for Merle Kelch. Again, Attorney Haugum's area of expertise is estate planning. As you've heard, the law is changing, and even if you have a plan, getting it updated and making sure that you're aware of all these changes is something you have to do between now and July 1st. 715-845-2155. And we have another caller. Hello, caller. What's your name, please?
This is Steve.
Hi, Steve. You're on with Attorney Alan Haugum.
Yeah. My question is, are IRA accounts protected from being accessed by the state once a person goes into long-term care?
So this is, say, a parent's IRA. So your mother or father has put it.
Or your own.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, actually, Steve, you know, before the show starts, I always create just a list of topics that I want to talk about. And believe it or not, this was the first one on my list. And we started talking about a few things, and I haven't even gotten to the list yet. So
Steve, thank you for taking us
perfect
there.
Perfect timing. Yeah, this is not a setup. Well, Steve, there's a few rules. There are some rules about just basic asset protection. For example, if you're in a car accident or someone sues you or all those kinds of things. Your retirement accounts, let's just go through them very quickly. Your retirement accounts, and think of 401ks. We've got 403bs and 457 plans if you work in a school or a hospital or for the government, but they're all analogous. The 401k is probably the most common. Your 401k plan, those types of work retirement plans are completely exempt from an asset protected regardless of the value of the account, number one. Second, if you have an IRA that's not in a work plan and never came from a work plan, but it's at a financial advisor, just a plain Jane IRA, that's asset protected up to $1 million for everything out in the world. All of these are with the exception of long-term care and nursing home care. For nursing home care rules, and every state is different, but Wisconsin says that the spouse who is the healthy of the couple, we'll pick on a married couple for now. If it's a married couple, the healthy spouse gets to keep their retirement accounts, but the spouse in the nursing home has to use theirs. If you don't do any planning, don't do any protecting of it ahead of time, you know, there are a few things you can attempt to do, but it has to be very specific, a lot of legal work. And you say if you didn't do anything, then the spouse who needs nursing home care, the state says they want that that dollar amount. The healthy spouse who has their own IRA or their own 401k or their own retirement account, their own qualified retirement account, that's protected. And you say, fantastic, that's great, wonderful. Except, what if that person dies? Who's the beneficiary on the IRA of the healthy spouse? Well, it's the other spouse, right? Isn't that what everyone does? I name my wife or I name my husband. So you thought this was protected. Wife needs nursing home care. Husband thinks everything's okay because his 401k and his IRA is exempt or protected. Husband dies, and that entire account now goes to his wife in the nursing home, or essentially it goes to the state. So, Steve, the IRAs are one where the state basically says, we'll just keep waiting, and eventually it comes to us, because you're going to give it to your spouse. Your spouse is going to pass away after the fact. They're going to attempt to collect that with something that we call estate recovery. We can get into those rules. You might not even have time for the rest of this show to get into them. I think I might be back in a couple of weeks, and we can finish that up. But it's the type of thing where this is really a much longer conversation. This might be half of a show kind of a conversation. But the short answer is that they are protected for anything other than medical assistance or nursing home care to begin with. Once you need nursing home care, they're not protected anymore. And, of course, because all spouses just funnel those accounts to each other, eventually it all goes to the state if you haven't done anything. Now, what do you do about it? Well, that healthy spouse might say, while both husband and wife are healthy, they might say, we're going to change our beneficiary designation. So if either one of us ever dies, we're going to transfer it, not to each other, because we might be in a nursing home at the time. We're going to transfer it to some type of account, some type of trust. This is a lot of the trust planning we do. Transfer it to a trust that can benefit the other spouse, but isn't susceptible to nursing home care. And I think that's where a lot of the planning comes in, Steve.
All right, Steve, thank you for your call at 715-845-2155. Maybe this is a common 401k or retirement plan estate. Maybe this is a mistake. People get married later on in life. Say it's a couple in their 30s, and they've finally found each other, and they've found love, and she has been working and has been contributing to a 401k. he has been working and has been contributing to a 401k, and they say, we're going to combine our finances together. That may not necessarily be a good idea should 20 or 30 years down the road someone need long-term or nursing home care.
That is one of the most, by far the most common pitfalls that we see. It's something that we see literally every week. And we
because they
say,
think of marriage as a joining of everything,
right.
And yet the law and smart financial strategy may be a little different than that.
And I always say, it's wonderful that you found each other. That is amazing and fantastic in this crazy world that the two of you found each other and from this day forward are married and can be happy. But just because, you know, he has four kids from a prior marriage and she has two kids from a prior marriage and they have been divorced or one of them has been widowed, it causes an extra layer of difficulty. Just because for some of those folks, the biggest assets they have, you know, the house has a mortgage on it, but the 401k is something that they've been contributing to forever. And that might be the only thing that they had left from before. And suddenly they are now mid-30s or mid-40s or mid-50s. And that's the biggest asset they have. And some of our state and federal laws say that the beneficiary on your retirement account has to be your spouse. And you say, well, wait a minute. Should that be, first of all, should we, if I die, should I give everything to someone who is not the mother of my children? Because if she dies after me, it goes to her kids and not mine. You know, my kids are not heirs of hers. You know, they're not her descendants. So just basically from basic economic and family fairness, that's gone. But the second thing is, for nursing home care, we run into this all the time. It's not that people are remarried when they're 35. We have people who remarried when they're 65 or 75. And all of those assets of a lifetime are now susceptible to nursing home care expenses. And if someone says, oh, no, no, I drafted a prenuptial agreement, so my assets are mine, my wife's assets are hers, and they never come together, so we've taken care of that. Well, Wisconsin says that works in some other contexts if you've done it right, but it doesn't work at all for nursing home expenses. Prenuptial agreements are meaningless for nursing home expenses.
I bet when people finally decide to get married, probably the least romantic part is saying, let's take this to an attorney. Not even in terms of a prenuptial agreement, but in terms of estate planning now, because what we are really doing here with this marriage is merging
right.
What had been two separate financial entities that are now going to come together as one. I bet a lot of people don't take advantage of that, but from hearing you talk about it, they really should.
Right, and I think one of the things that you should think about isn't, here's exactly when you come into someone's office, say, I have to draft a will, or I have to draft a trust, or I have to draft a... I think you start with, what are your goals? And that's what we always ask. I mean, first thing we ask are, what are your goals? And we just write them down. We have a goal sheet and just list them, 1, 2, 3, 10, whatever, however many there are, and we're going to cover that. However many goals you have, that's what we're going to try to deal with. And I think one of the first ones should be, how do we protect each other? How do we protect the finances to our kids? How do we protect those assets for long-term care? And if we can do that, those should be goals, and they are. And if we do things right, that we'll get things in the right place, but it all starts with really the planning ahead of time.
We are overdue for a break, and then we will have time to sneak in another one or two phone calls. If you'd like to get in and talk with Attorney Alan Haugham, 715-845-2155, but we're only on until 9 o'clock, and we have one caller who's waiting. We'll get to her right after the break on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Brewers baseball on the Brewers Station, WSAU.
Hello again, everyone.
Bob Uecker, Joe Block, and the Brewers on AM 550, FM 99.9.
All right, here we go.
WSAU.
Hey, get up! Get out of here! Go!
The Brewers are right here. AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
The Brewers play the Pirates in Pittsburgh. Game coverage begins at 5:30 on News Talk Sports, WSAU.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car. Which, if you're buzzed,
to
could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
There are superheroes among us. They are citizen warriors back home from duty. Even superheroes need support now and then. That's why the Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program is here to help. We serve today's heroes, National Guard and Reserve members, before, during, and after deployment. To learn more, visit yellowribbon.mil. A message from the Department of Defense.
You're listening to Making Financial Sense on AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU. No one who's normally here is here today. Tom King and Merle Kelch are off. I'm Chris Conley with attorney Alan Haugum. 715-845-2155 if you'd like to talk about estate planning, and we do have a caller that's waiting. Hi, caller. What's your name, please?
My name is Joyce.
Joyce?
Yes.
You're on with attorney Alan Haugum. Go ahead.
Good morning, Joyce.
Good morning, Alan. Alan, I got to turn off my radio, I think.
Yes, turn your radio down. This way you'll hear only one thing instead of two things.
All right. We have a situation where... turn you off. Okay. We have a situation where we have... a variable annuity with a life payout for both spouses, but it can't be in our trust, because if the trust has it, then only one spouse can be covered. Now, if something happened to one, is there a way to arrange that then it would be put into the trust without somebody having to, come over to you and say, let's get this done, some kind of a paper that can be done ahead of time?
Joyce, there are almost as many annuities as there are people who use them. It's the type of thing where the annuities have so many variables. I think this is one that we might not be able to answer with exact certain.
Alan's going to need to know more specifics
about your
case.
I think this might be one where we need to take a look at the actual document and talk to the financial advisor. And sometimes in these cases, what we'll do is we'll just get someone on the line from the annuity company. Not the first person who answers the phone when you call, but there are always people in those companies somewhere who deal with the tax compliance, and they have a legal department. And what we just do is say, here's the way we set it up. And we might talk or we might describe it in the language that they understand, and where they'll say, oh, no, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. And we say, well, here, the way we do it is we'll add these three things in, or these specific provisions in. And sometimes they'll say, oh, well, sure, you can do that. Well, yeah, if we knew you were doing that, that's no problem. But it's unusual, but we understand that you can do that as long as you plan ahead. Most people don't do what you're thinking of, Joyce, because it just takes a little bit of you have to burn a few calories, frankly, to get to the point you're talking about. Most people just say, we'll purchase this annuity because of the investments, or because of the guarantees, or because of the payouts. In their situation, for their dollar amount, if that works, it causes this payout for both spouses. And they just leave it at that. And if something ever happens to one of them or the other, they say, well, that's just the way it goes. And the state or someone else gets the rest of it. But I think when you're talking about that specific of a situation, that might be more than we can answer on the radio without seeing the documents in hand. So I think that's one where, whether it's good or bad, I think you should grab the financial advisor and the attorney and just talk to them at the same time.
Well, you are our attorney.
Oh, good.
We have our trust with you, and we've been through this. And we had to take the small IRA out of the trust so that I would not lose my own coverage. But now we had to put all our money into that one.
Okay.
So there's a lot bigger amount in there that's all we've got.
Well, I think what it would
and
be
we
easiest
have to do that. We have to come to you, I suppose, and have you.
Yeah,
fix it so that
if that might be one where I'll talk to the financial advisor and we'll get to the bottom of it and we'll just make sure it's in the right place. But you're doing the right thing, just being proactive about it. No, I think you're on the right track, Joyce.
Joyce, so thank you for calling. It sounds absolutely. Like it's time to update the plan.
Yeah, well, even, maybe not even update the plan, but just make sure the financial advisor knows all the rules. But because Joyce, if Joyce and her husband did things ahead of time, then we should be able to do that.
Here comes my biggest pitch for why you need someone like Attorney Alan Haugum. I bet a lot of people have long-term planning that's been done piecemeal, that you bought an annuity from one person, you have a realtor who's handled the buying and selling of your house, that's someone different, your 401k is something from work, so they have their own financial company that they work with, and no one has the overall picture of you. Instead, you have little bits and pieces that come from different advisors. You might get your insurance from someone else,
right.
Or maybe you are with a nursing home and they have their own team of advisors. If you're working with one attorney whose area is estate and financial planning, that's the one person who might have the full overview of everything involving your estate and your assets.
Right, and I always say, and we literally put in writing for every one of our clients that we want to be able to speak to your tax professional. We want to be able to speak to your financial advisor first. So the three of us want to be able to talk to each other, and clients say that's fantastic. Of course we want that to happen. And then beyond that, if we have extra questions for the insurance person, if we have extra questions for the company retirement plan, if we have extra questions about the real estate details, can we talk to those people too? Absolutely. So, for example, in Joyce's case, she's absolutely doing the right thing by saying she sees the issues. Who do we talk to? She calls and says, yeah, we'll talk to her financial advisor. We'll block off some time and just say, what are the three things that we need to do to make sure Joyce and her husband's plan does exactly what she thinks it does? But that's what planning is, frankly. It's not the piecemeal part. It's everybody getting together and having one plan, because no one knows everything that's going on.
In just the moment that we have left, we mentioned this earlier in the show. We should give it out again. Alan Haugum has his law office here in Wausau on the west side. And, of course, he's got a phone number and website where you can interact. If you've heard something in this program that has hit home with you and you say, gee, that's an area where I need to make sure that my life and my estate is in order, how can they get in touch with you, Alan?
Well, our office on the west side of Wausau, Chris, our phone number is 715-843-5001, 843-5001. And the website is haugumlaw.com, haugumlaw.com.
And I hope you've taken away from this program that this is an area of the law that is changing. It changed with the budget that was signed from Madison last year, and these are changes that take effect on July 1st. So it is a great time to make sure that your plan is updated. Alan, I haven't seen you in a long time. It is great to catch up with you. I get a year's worth of legal advice in one of these sittings. Thank you for joining us this Saturday morning.
I always enjoy it, Chris. Thank you.
All right, Merle Kelch and Tom King will be back next Saturday. And again, if you've missed something that we've talked about on this program, the program is podcast under Making Financial Sense. That's the name of our program, and it's on AM 550, FM 99.9, and our website, WSAU.com. Polka Time America and our polka programs run until noon today. Brewers baseball at 5:30 as the Brewers take on the Pirates here on WSAU. They were 5-3 winners in Pittsburgh yesterday. This is Making Financial Sense. Fox News Radio is coming up next on WSAU.
News, talk, sports. WSAU Wausau, WSAU FM, Rudolph, Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids.